Hey everyone, it's Eric. Quick note before the podcast starts. This was recorded on Monday night, so when you hear me and my guest on this episode talking about J.J. Weatherholt and where he might play this season, we mentioned that Arenado might get traded. Obviously, this happened right after we recorded. That trade happened on Tuesday. We recorded on Monday, so we did not know about the trade at that time. So in case you were kind of confused as to why we're talking about that, that is why. But let's cue the intro music.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, the Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed podcast brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 434. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross, going through shortstop prospect rankings today, kicking off the always exciting shortstop position, you know, both from a dynasty and a prospect perspective. And I have one of the best in the business here to break it all down for me with Baseball America, prospect writer, MILB beat, also a BBWAA member, threw a first pitch strike at McCoy Stadium. That's always impressive. Got to get the ball over the plate there. At Jeff Ponce, BA on Twitter. Mr. Jeff Ponce. Jeff, how's it going, man?
Pretty good. Yeah, I was 11 years old. And
More impressive.
I threw it from the mound, like full speed, like full bore. Like I let it fly. Eric Wedge was the catcher for
Hawks at that point.
If you remember, he was a manager many years later for was the Indians, now the Guardians, and the Mariners after that. So it's a little baseball nugget for you.
Man, McCoy, I remember, I think you and I first met at McCoy Stadium.
Yeah, we were seeing Acuna. Yep,
yeah, back in 2018, 17, yeah, 18.
17 or 18, like whenever Acuna got called up. It might have been 17.
I feel like Was that the Luis Gohara like rehab outing too, or is that a different one I was at? I can't remember.
So, I think it was, yeah, because there was another one I was at. I don't know if you were there. I remember Kyle Wright like shoved, and Pedroia, it was like when he tried to come back and then like called it a career. It was like one of his last professional games, and it was against Kyle Wright. Good that day. He had like one good season with the Braves.
Yeah, he absolutely did, but. I always remember the first time I went to McCoy, it's just like you're just driving through Pawtucket, Rhode Island, and all of a sudden it's like, it feels like you're just like on like back roads, you know, and then it's also like, oh, boom, there's a stadium kind of just popping up in the middle of nowhere. So it was like a weird spot for a stadium, I remember.
Yeah, I grew up like 15 minutes away from McCoy, so I went there like a lot as a kid, a lot. I mean, it's just kind of buried in like this industrial area near the railroad crossing tracks, like it had some charm. It's a big part of my childhood. So the fact that it's knocked down and gone, and I didn't get to say goodbye because the last year that we were supposed to have games in Pawtucket before they moved to Worcester was 2020. And of course the season was canceled. So they did have some alternate site stuff, but they didn't allow any media into those games.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, I think if I recall correctly, my last game there, I forget what season it was, but it was a playoff game, and it was – I had a buddy who lived down in Providence, Rhode Island at the time. I was down visiting him, and Dan Butler hit two solo home runs. It was like a 2-1 game or something like where there was like no scoring, but besides Dan Butler hitting, you know, just random, you know, journeyman catcher Dan Butler hitting a couple solo shots to win the game. So that was my I can't remember what year that was. Probably – 16, 17, I don't remember. It would have been like maybe 19. I don't remember. Something like that. But yeah, good times. But yeah, shortstop prospects, lots of intriguing names here. Obviously, top of basically every prospect ranking these days has, in some order, Connor Griffin and Kevin McGonigal. So let's start there with our personal top 10 rankings for this shortstop position. Jeff, who do you guys got in the 1-10 spots?
Yeah, so Connor Griffin, number one. Kevin McGonigal, 2. J.J. Weatherholt, 3. Jesus Mate, 4. Aiden Miller, 5. Sebastian Walcott, 6. Leo DeVries, 7. Bryce Rainer, 8. Colt Emerson, 9. And then Caleb Bonnemer at 10.
I like that Bonnemer call. I was just talking him up last episode, mm-hmm. and he's a fun prospect for sure, but one of many fun prospects at this position. For me here, I also lead with Griffin and McGonigal, and then these next few are basically almost interchangeable in my opinion. I got Mate 3, DeVries 4, Weatherholt 5, Sebastian Walcott 6, Aiden Miller 7, Colt Emerson 8, Luis Pena 9, and Bryce Rainer in the 10 spot. But let's just start with the two big names here, you know, Griffin and McGonigal. Obviously very different players, you know, a couple years apart in age, different profiles, but both very, very exciting long-term aspirations for these two guys. We'll start with Griffin. So, I mean, I think you can make a strong case that he has the highest upside of any prospect in the minor leagues today, coming off a 21 homer, 65 steal season with a 333, 415, 527 slash line. As a 19-year-old getting up to double A, his first season didn't have any time, you know, at least not in actual minor league games, before 2025, just hit the ground running and never looked back. So, you know, I hate to make comps, Jeff. I really do for prospects. But, I mean, I've said if any one prospect currently were to become a first-round, like, fantasy guy, I feel like Griffin is the, kind of like the leader in the clubhouse there. So, like, what do you think we're looking at? You know, when it's all said and done, what type of player do you think we're looking at here with Connor Griffin?
Yeah, I mean, I think even first round might be, you know, sort of conservative. I think this is right. He's got to be the number one player in fantasy. You know, I'm not sure that we've had a high school player with this combination of tools, athleticism, you know, polish, and defensive ability, like, in a really long time. Because, you know, I think the comp is probably Bobby Witt Jr., right? Like, that's right. Sort of what the high end is. He's a bigger guy than Bobby Witt Jr., a more polished defender at this point than Bobby Witt Jr. was, and it's a more polished hit tool than Bobby Witt Jr. had at this point in time. You know, like, I think that's what the craziest part of this is. There's probably more power to come. The angles will probably get even better. But the changes that he made to the swing between the end of his senior season and the beginning, like, of spring training last year were immense. I mean, like, you know, we showed up in Pirate City, and seeing Griffin for the first time, it was like seeing Fernando Tatis in the backfields. It was like, all right, like, this is a major guy. Right. And I think Josh Norris and I, who were the two that were down there in Bradenton, it was kind of like, all right, like, this is an easy top 20 prospect. Like, there's no way he's not top 20 right now. And then it was like, how high could he go? And I think both Josh and I were like, this could be a top five guy at the end, you know, by the end of the season. Now, there were a lot of questions about the hit tool. He didn't hit a ton on the showcase circuit. He hit some and was obviously an impressive player. But, you know, played against lower level competition in Mississippi, frankly. Like, it's not bad high school baseball, but it's not great high school baseball. You're not talking about, like, the CIF Southern section. Like, you know, This isn't the top high school conference in the country or anything like that. So there are some questions on that. And I think, like, if you remember, you look at his game logs, his first game, he struck out like 3 or 4 times. And he had like 6 strikeouts over his first 2 games. And that, like, because of small sample size, it skewed his strikeout rate for like a month or so. But if you remove those couple of games and then go, it like drops down to like 20% or something. It's goofy. So the bat to ball was there. And the power, obviously, if you just look at the EVs and stuff that's been reported, you just kind of watch the film, you see him physically. I mean, Eric, you've met me before. I'm a fairly large human, and he's probably got like 2 or 3 inches on me. And is built, you know, like a tight end. Like, yep. You know, he's just a monster, and he's a really good defender at shortstop, and he's probably a 60 at short, and he's probably a 70 in center field. and I've seen him play both and just be phenomenal at both. You know, plus runner. I don't think the speed's going to go away. And yeah, I mean, there's like 30 home run, 40 steal, 300 average, 100 runs, 100 RBIs kind of upside. Like this could be a Hall of Famer. I mean, you don't want to put that on a 19-year-old kid, but this is different. This is, you know, we've seen a lot of guys come through the minor leagues, you know, over the last 10 years that have turned out to be big stars. Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, Acuna, Tatis, like, you know, Vlad, like I've seen so many of these guys that are humongous stars. And Griffin is every bit as good as any of those guys at the point that I saw him. And just, you know, he's, you know, having talked to Connor now 3 or 4 times, cause I went and I presented the minor league player of the year award to him. He's just really humble, down to earth. You know, kind of not like a guy who's going to get in any trouble off the field or anything like that. So, yeah, I think the Pirates got themselves a good one, and, you know, maybe this is what finally him and Skeens and some of the pieces they put together, maybe this is what finally sort of breaks up that, you know, long suffering period of misery and despair for Pirates fans. But yeah, I mean, I know it sounds high, you know, like hyperbole, but he truly is as good of a prospect as I've seen or I've covered. And, you know, the first year I was at BA, like the top 3 choices were for number 1 prospect, Bobby Witt Jr., Adley Rutschman, and Julio, you know, and honestly, Connor is pound for pound as good as those guys.
Yeah. Like I was saying, like we hate doing that. And I know a lot of us, you know, that rank and evaluate prospects just hate putting those lofty comps, but sometimes you have to. I mean, sometimes it just fits, and you, especially with a generational talent like Connor Griffin. And you mentioned even the areas where there were some concerns. You mentioned like the hit tool, you know, contact, maybe a little bit too much swing and miss, you know, when he was drafted. But he cleaned that up, you know, throughout the season while still hitting for power and doing everything else he was doing. And yeah, I looked that up, you know, a while back, you know, looking at the first 2 months of the season. So April and May, he had a 5%. So if you combine those 2 months, 5% walk rate, 24.5% strikeout rate. But then the remainder of the season, so June through the end of the season, 11% walk rate down to just over 20% strikeout rate. So yeah, the fact that he, you know, the one or two little areas of concern he improved upon, and just the upside is so immense. I mean, just look at what he did as a 19-year-old. Like, you know, already talked about all the stats here. He had the highest WRC plus by a teenage prospect in the last decade. Like, it was ahead of the other names that were like in that top list, were Jackson Holliday a couple years ago, Vlad Jr. and Acuna back in 2017, Junior Caminero in 2023. Like, that was the top 5, and he was, you know, a bit ahead of all of them. So yeah, it's just really, really exciting what he can do. And yeah, Pirates fans, Skeens and Griffin, they have a chance to really do some damage here if they can build around that. And hey, they're starting to spend some money, so maybe that's a sign of things to come here. We'll see. Pittsburgh fans deserve a competitive team here. But the other guy, Kevin McGonigal, very different, but still a very, really, really good all-around prospect. Just in a much different way here. You know, probably one of the more polished guys I've seen. You know, I saw him both in AA and out in Arizona. I mean, guy that had more walks than strikeouts this year, 15% walk rate, 11.5% strikeout rate, slash 305, 408, 583, had a 182 WRC plus, which I believe led the minor league. So him and Parks Harbor, I think, were the top 2, if I recall correctly. 19 bombs, 10 steals, and 88 games between mostly high A and AA, that have 6 games down in low A as well. So what do you think here with McGonigal, you know, Jeff? Obviously, a little bit of a smaller guy, but really packs a punch. You know, that power is really sneaky good, and not like as flashy as a Connor Griffin, but yes, I think one of the higher floor guys in the minor leagues right now. So what do you think he turns into long term?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the best hit tools that I probably have evaluated. And that's why he's even in the conversation with a guy like Griffin, because he's not the defender. He's not the athlete. He will run a little bit, I think, for sure. And kind of has that like gritty, and this isn't just a small guy comp, but I think maybe sometimes that goes hand in hand with a little toughness. He's kind of got that Dustin Pedroia edge to him. He's a Pennsylvania kid that just wants to win and is kind of a maniac in that regard. But yeah, you look over under the hood this year, 13.8% in zone whiff, 18.1% whiff overall, 20.3% chase rate. And when I look at chase rates, I always balance it against the swing rate. So like he had a 45.4% swing rate. That means the delta between his chase and swing was 25.1%, which is like an elite number. The reason that I look at that, Eric, is it's sort of a way to, if I don't have like heart swing rate or zone swing rate, it's a way for me to sort of reverse engineer plate approach metrics, right? Because it's one thing to just not swing at any pitches out of the zone because you don't swing at many pitches. Like you're running, you know, you're like Theo Gillen and you're running like a 30% swing rate.
Right.
When you see low chase rates with higher or average swing rates, like you do with McGonagall, and you have that higher delta between the chase and the swing, that tells you that they're going to have a higher heart swing and they're going to have a higher zone swing because those swings obviously have to come from a certain point. So it's sort of a way to reverse engineer, but not in a precise way, zone swing. He had one of the higher chase minus swing rates. And then you look at the angles, you look at the EVs, it's a 105.3 90th. He had a 113.3 was his max exit this year. Ex-Woba 384, ex-WobaCon 381. So you look at all these numbers, and I think one of the things about him that ties all this together is just the barrel control. So he has the bat to ball skills. He's got the excellent, you know, plate discipline and the discerning eye to be a great hitter. He's able to generate a lot of power despite being, you know, it's a smaller frame, but he's boxy. Like he's broad, very broad shouldered and like, you know, kind of strong in that regard. But it's the angles are really consistently good and he pulls the ball as well as anybody. I mean, just, you know, a hitter that consistently is able to backspin the ball to his pull side. And it's, you know, he's a left-handed hitter on top of that. So those like short porches, like if he plays at Yankee Stadium, he could have like some monster weekends. Especially if you try to, you know, jam a fastball in him, inside on him. Like he's a guy that just turns on stuff and it's true pull, backspin, you know, just really, really clean barrels. And I think that the concept, it hasn't necessarily been like put out there in a public way, but I think the concept of like clean backspin and clean barrels and spin efficiency on batted balls, is sort of a skill and something that certain hitters do better than others. It's the reason that Alex Bregman, despite middling EVs, is able to hit as many home runs as he has. Joey Votto, when he sort of figured it out, it was something he talked about, of like catching flush barrels. And so I think, you know, just like with a four-seam fastball where like, you know, a four-seam fastball, like guys throw it different ways. There's guys that have, you know, really true spin that get behind the ball and there's like 99% active spin, you know, on their four seam. Those are the guys that typically are able to ride it or create really flat angles on the four seam. And there's other guys that cut their four seam fastball, you know, and, you know, that causes it to be a little bit less efficient and on the plane. And I think it's the same thing. It's why you'll see a guy hit a ball 115 and it like, you know, goes to the warning track and another guy hits a ball 106 and it flies out to right field. I think McGonagall is one of those guys that does that really well, just based on all these metrics, having watched him. You know, I saw him for four series last year in the Futures game and spring training for about five or six games. So I had a really good chunk and sample size with him over a couple of years. And the other thing is, you know, he just plays the game at 100% all the time. You know, he never takes plays off. So he's going to be a fun player to own, a fun player to root for. And I think he's the kind of guy that, you know, Tigers fans are going to love him. Baseball fans are going to love him. You know, new school fans are going to love him. And because of his hustle and grit, old school, you know, curmudgeon-y, grandpa. You're going to like him too. So yeah, I think he's a great player. I think these are two top-notch prospects, and I think they're two prospects where it's going to translate for fantasy. McGonagall's not going to steal 30 bases, but he might steal 15 to 20. Like, he's that kind of a player. So you don't want to necessarily write it off. I think there's 15 to 25 homer power probably right off the bat. If he was playing in a place like Cincinnati or New York, I might say it's 20 to 25 right off the bat, but Detroit isn't necessarily the easiest place to hit him out of. So, right. We'll see how it all plays, but yeah, I think there's power. I think he's going to hit for a high average. He's going to be great in OBP leagues, and he's going to be an absolute star in points leagues because he just does so many things that contribute scoring points.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like I said, doesn't strike out much at all, draws those walks. Probably a guy that just hits a ton of doubles, probably like one of the league leaders in doubles every year, just extra base hits in general.
Just hits. I mean, exactly. He seems like a guy that you can pencil in like 200 hits for a bunch of years, Yep. And if he gets up early enough, like it wouldn't be shocking if he's maybe, one of the next guys to flirt with like 3,000 from this kind of generation. So we'll see if that ever happens again, but it doesn't feel like it's going to happen for a lot of these guys that had chunks of their careers, sucked up in 2020 where they only played 50 games.
I know.
Yeah. People are going to realize how much that's going to like impact historical numbers and Hall of Fame voting,
Yep. That was total bummer for especially a lot of those guys that are at the tail end of their career, like the Albert Pujolses and, the Miggies and all them, to see what they could have done with another, 100 whatever games that year. But yeah, I fortunate enough to have seen McGonagall as well, probably, 6, 7, 8 games, whatever it was, between Double A and the AFL. And yeah, he just, everything was loud with him. Even his outs were loud. I saw him hit 2 pole side home runs, one the right, one more so to right center. I saw him and Max Clark go back to back, just open up a game in any area. That was pretty fun. But he is just a hitter through and through. I think you could say maybe he's the highest floor prospect. And that's not to say, like you mentioned, it's going to translate for fantasy too. So just saying he's a high floor guy doesn't mean that he's boring or doesn't have a good amount of upside, because he absolutely does. I agree. Like, I think you could be looking at a, 20 plus homer guy, 15, mid teens kind of steal guy that's hitting, for a super high average, great OBP, scoring a ton of runs, driving in a good bunch too. So he might not be as flashy as a Griffin, but still really good 5 category guy without any real weakness in the profile. And I assume it's gonna be at shortstop. Maybe he moves over to second base at some point. We'll see. Regardless, it's gonna be fun, especially if it's that second base. Obviously that position's a little less exciting from offensive fantasy perspective at these days. But McGonagall is one of the better pure hitters I think I've seen personally in my time doing this. I know you've done it longer than I have, so but yeah, McGonagall was just
I agree.
Yeah, he's just such a good hitter. Like, you just look at a guy, you're just like, all right, this guy passes the eye test. Like, this guy's gonna be a major league hitter and a very good one for a very long time. Like, this guy's gonna be playing 15 plus years in the big leagues and like to maybe even flirting with some pretty historic numbers by the time it's all said and done. So yeah, I think it's pretty easy right now. Like, the next tier of guys I'll get into here in a second are all really fun as well, but I think it's clear cut. Like, these are the top two dudes right now, both for real life and fantasy purposes. So, all right, get into the next tier guys here, kind of like tier two. And we got two guys that are really looking to, possibly make a pretty good impact at the major league level this year. JJ Weatherholt with the Cardinals and Aiden Miller with the Phillies. But it's the real question is, at what position? Both those teams have, pretty good shortstops right now, Trey Turner and Mason Winn. So you kind of got to wonder, does that mean Miller moves over to third and Boehm gets traded or whatever it could be? Weatherholt second or third, maybe, with Mason Winn at shortstop. So what type of impact do you think Weatherholt and Miller make this year, Jeff? And kind of where do you think they kind of slot in initially and maybe even long-term for their respective teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Weatherholt, I think Arenado, something will probably happen if they can make it happen over the next couple of months. And it wouldn't shock me if Weatherholt breaks camp. Hit in AAA for half the season, more or less, because I think he got called up to AAA a couple weeks before the Futures game when we saw him. And, you know, it is, you know, plus plus hit. Another guy's going to hit for a really high average. There's power there, but he doesn't sell out for it. Obviously, you know, the park in St. Louis might limit some of those home run numbers. I do think he's a guy that's going to compete for NL Rookie of the Year, probably at third base. You know, it wouldn't shock me if he plays some games at second, plays some games at short when Wynn gets some days off. And yeah, I think it just comes down to them being able to move Arenado. If they're able to do that, that opens up the spot and, you know, probably fits in perfectly. And that's a really good, you know, left side of your infield there.
Yeah, absolutely.
J.J. Weatherholt, who I think is probably an above average defender at shortstop. Like, he's pretty good there. It's an above average arm. You know, he runs pretty well as well. So I think he's going to contribute. It just maybe does it. It's maybe not, you know, the peak home run or power output that you're going to see from him early. I do think he eventually probably gets there where it's like 25 home run seasons for a good string of seasons. It's going to be a lot of doubles, probably is more like in the 14 to 17 home run range, but probably hits 280, gets on base, you know, scores a fair amount of runs, and, you know, racks up some counting stats. He's just a really good all around player.
Yeah. Yeah. He absolutely is. And yeah, it would be kind of a crime for the Cardinals not to give him, you know, like the vast majority of his time, if not all of his time this upcoming season in the majors. You know, obviously they're going through a bit of a rebuild now and already have traded off a couple of those pieces to the Red Sox, no less, but yeah, I think Weatherholt, you know, I'm not entirely sure. Obviously, you know, like you said, Arenado being traded would free up that spot for sure. But even if it's kind of bouncing around between those three spots that you mentioned, yeah, Weatherholt almost, you know, again, kind of a more closer to a McGonagall type player than a Griffin type player, where it's just really good across the board. You know, he hits for power. He almost had as many walks as strikeouts, you know, this past year. You know, 20 homer guy, 20 steal guy. High average, high OBP, just really does a lot of things well on the field. And you mentioned, you know, the plus-plus hit, doesn't swing and miss too much, only 8% swing and strike rate this past year. Just a lot of good in that profile with Weatherholt, a guy that, you know, I think is just going to be, you know, one of those top, maybe even like a top five fantasy option at whatever position he winds up at. You know, maybe not shortstop, you know, because of just how studly this position is, but if he winds up at second or third, I mean, maybe would it shock you, Jeff? Let's say he goes the second base route. You know, a couple years from now, that Weatherholt was like the number one dude at this position, or at least up in that conversation with, like, you know, the Holidays of the world. I think that upside is absolutely there.
Yeah, I think he's got more upside than Jackson Holiday does.
Agreed. Yep, agreed. Like,
if he outproduced Jackson Holiday this season, it wouldn't shock me. I just think he's a better hitter.
Yeah,
there's more power. You know, it just happened to go the college route as opposed to being the 1-1.
Right.
But could have been. I mean, he was in conversations to potentially go with that pick that Pisano went.
No, what about Aiden Miller? What do you think the outlook for him this year is?
Yeah, I would imagine he begins the season in AAA and probably sees, you know, maybe at least the first 2 months. I'd probably bet more like a late June, July type of call-up. Will depend on certainly some of the moves that they make or don't make. Baum is one that you mentioned. I think he probably is a third baseman long-term and not necessarily a shortstop. But I have honestly gotten really good defensive reports from scouts this year that, like, are much higher than what mine would have been, and it was universal. And so, you know, our reporting is that it's potentially a plus shortstop, and like the metrics back it, the looks back it, it's a big arm. So, you know, maybe he is the shortstop of the future and they move, you know, Trey Turner to second, or maybe even move Turner to third. I don't know, you know, but I do think he's going to be on the left side of the infield. There's big raw power. I think the angles will get better. He had to make some adjustments in his swing. If you kind of look at the early swing, it was just like the way his hands moved. It wasn't really a hitch, but the way that his hands moved, it sort of like left the barrel like out. So it was like constantly like oppo contact and a lot of like ground balls. they've made some adjustments to try to get to better angles. Some of, you know, as he went on his like hot streak at the end of the season, that was some of the adjustments that started to take flight. I think once he gets to better angles, like 20 home run power in a great park, right? Yeah. And the EVs might even say that it's a little more than the 20 home runs. And it might be being a little conservative. He's a plus runner, stole what, 50 bags, 40 something bags last year?
Yeah, 59 bags.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, obviously that probably translates to maybe 30, you know. So, and the hit tool's always been there as well. I think it took him a little while to adjust to double A. But once, you know, he sort of got his feet set and got his feet under it, it seemed like the production really came, and there's a lot of things to like about Miller. And I'm kind of a convert. I wasn't a huge Miller fan out of the draft. And even his first year, I thought he was a little overrated. But I'm kind of eating crow on that one, you know, and he's now, you know, a top 20 prospect. I think whether it's fantasy or real life list, you got to put him up there because of the balance of, defense and hitting ability.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I was definitely, I mean, I liked Miller coming out of the draft. You know, I don't think I was like super high on him, but especially earlier this year, I found myself dropping him further down my rankings than, you know, in hindsight, I definitely should not have dropped him down as far as I did. But yeah, like you mentioned, making those tangible changes, you know, with the swing that kind of unlocked that hot, you know, final, you know, whatever 50, 60 games, whatever he had to end the season. So yeah, like this is a guy that I'm now really absolutely excited about and have definitely adjusted my rankings accordingly. And even when I'm talking about him right now, I feel like I want to move him up another spot, a couple of spots higher, just because you look at, you know, regardless if it's short or third, I mean, like you mentioned, like that blend of power, speed, you know, above average contact skills, you know, high walk rate. It was about 15.5% walk rate this year as well. So probably a good OBP guy. You know, if he's giving you, you know, 20 plus, at third base, that'd be phenomenal. Obviously, we don't get a ton of those 20 plus steal guys at third base. So getting him over there, I think, would be phenomenal, even if it's that shortstop. I mean, this is a really fun, very fantasy friendly, you know, all around profile. So yeah, Ada Miller, I'm right with you. I dropped him down too far, but I've adjusted accordingly and now have him ranked very highly, as he should be. All right, last guy here in this kind of top 10 range, Bryce Rainer with the Detroit Tigers, 11th overall pick in the 2024 draft, signed for a little bit under $5.8 million, another high school guy, made his debut in low A this past year, only 35 games though. Season got ended prematurely due to a dislocated shoulder, unfortunately, but you know, Rainer was really showing some pretty exciting skills before he got hurt. 5 home runs, 9 steals in 35 games, had a walk rate of over 13%, right around a 22% K rate, slash 288, 383, 448. Yeah, so obviously, Jeff, I think Rainer is ranked fairly highly. It's not like he's sneaking up on anybody, but is this a guy that you think could maybe, you know, with a full healthy year here in 2026, kind of take that next step in and maybe join the truly elite kind of prospect rankings range? I mean, obviously a little bit of a different guy, you know, big power shortstop, big bodied shortstop, maybe not a burner long term, or a guy that gives you a ton of speed. Not to say he's not a decent runner, but definitely that bat could be truly, truly special. So do you think Bryce Rainer right now is just like a really good buy in dynasty leagues before that value potentially really takes off this year?
Yeah, I think so. I think the fact that we're saying it probably makes him less of a good buy, but like, cause it's already, you know, already out there. I think maybe the window was during last season where, you know, people saw the hype and then they're, you know, looking to make some moves, looking to improve their teams, and might be willing to part with a younger guy who, you know, has been a little injury prone. He had some injuries in high school too. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a Corey Seager comp, and I think it's funny that we said he's injury prone because that certainly has been a big part of Corey
That fits Seager too, absolutely.
But it is, I mean, he's a bigger bodied shortstop, you know, Xander Bogaerts. Like, there's a bunch of guys within that sort of range. And, you know, I think it's very similar, maybe more power than Bogaerts. I think it's probably 30 home run type of pop with a hit tool. It's probably a little more swing and miss than there is with Griffin. less running ability, but he is really, really talented. And I'm excited to see what a full season is, because it's not easy to hit in the Florida State League, especially early in the season. And, you know, prior to the injury, he was doing it. He looked very good in spring training.
Yeah. He was getting off to a really good start and really starting to make that big ascension up rankings. Just unfortunately, that darn shoulder injury put a screeching halt to a pretty good start to his professional career. But yeah, I like Rainer a good bit. That bat is really exciting. Can't wait to see him. I mean, I don't know if he'll get up to Double A this year. Maybe gets a cup of coffee there later in the year, but you know, I'm sure I'll probably see him a good bit next season, as in 2027. Once he does get up to Double A for a good chunk of time. So looking forward to that for sure.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed, plus an extra $100 off all mattresses. End Saturday. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
All right, let's move over to the next set of 10 here, 11 through 20. In our shortstop prospect rankings, Jeff, who do you guys got in those spots?
All right, you said 11 to 10. I mean 11 to 20.
11 to 20, yeah.
All right, so we have Luis Pena, Josuar Gonzalez, Dax Kilby, JoJo Parker, Kalen Culpepper, who I think probably moves to second base, but is technically a shortstop. Eli Willits, then a couple of international free agents. I have these guys listed, so I can list a couple more because they haven't officially signed until Thursday. But Luis Hernandez, the Giants, and then Johensi Colome, who, despite not getting as high of a bonus as Renteria, we have ranked as sort of the number two guy in just from a talent-based ranking and the feedback that Ben Badler's been doing. So I don't rank any of the international guys. I have Ben Badler to do that for me, who is an expert in that area. So I hand him my FYPD list, and I'm like, this time of year, when we come back from our little break for Christmas and New Year's, and I'm like, hey, here's my list. Plug in, you know, whatever international guys you think should be there. So Hernandez and Colome at 17 and 18. Steele Hall, Gavin Fine, Fien. And then Cooper Pratt and Ava Arquette. So there's a lot of like the FYPD tier in here. But I do think one of the strengths of this class where there were, you know, some really interesting high school shortstops.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll get to one of them in a second, but let me get my 11 through 20 here. For me, I got Emil Morales, JoJo Parker, Eli Willits, and then Kalen Culpepper, Ethan Holliday, who I don't even like that ranking that I'm looking at it, Chet Williams, Josuar Gonzalez, Caleb Bonnemer, Carson Williams, and Felnan Celestin are my 11 through 20. But I wanted to start, before we get to one of the kind of buzzy FYPD guys right now, I wanted to get to Kalen Culpepper. He's like a personal, really became a personal favorite of mine over the last year or so. 21st overall pick out of Kansas State in the 2024 draft. Went to the Twins for a little under a $4 million signing bonus. Got a little bit of time in after the draft last year, 26 games, but then played 113 games in 2025, nearly split between high A and double A, put together a 2025 season, / 289, 375, 469, walk rate just a hair under 10%, and a K rate around 17.5%. Now, you mentioned, Jeff, you think he probably moves over to second base, hey, even better. You know, not like, I'm not saying Culpepper's going to be a stud or anything like that, but yeah, I like the all-around, you know, blend of skills here. You know, pretty solid contact skills, doesn't swing and miss too much. You know, a little bit of power, a little bit of speed here. I think this could be just like a sneaky five-category guy. What do you think on Kalen Culpepper long-term here?
Yeah, I think he's going to run. I definitely think that he's going to hit for a decent average. On base percentage and like, you know, OBP leagues might be a little fringy. He chases a lot. It's kind of an overly aggressive approach. So that's kind of a concern. The power, like EV wise, is like at least like 40, maybe a little below that. I mean, it's like an 86 mile per hour average EV at a 102.690th. He did hit a ball 112.7. But it's the contact you're buying here. You know, it's the speed. It's, you know, the 14.4% in zone whiff rate, you know, all that sort of stuff is what you're buying into. And the fact that he's a twitchy athletic player that's going to probably hit at the top of a lineup. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know about five categories. I think it's probably going to be more like 12 to like 14 home runs, you know, but could score a lot of runs, could steal 30 bags, could hit, you know, 275 or better. Probably going to be better in more of your like standard 5x5 than a points or an OBP format, but we'll still be pretty solid there because he's going to contribute in, you know, I guess five categories, but I question the home run power a little bit. I think that those numbers are a little like what he did this year. I think it's just a little beyond what his ability is.
Kind of feels like, and this is not a direct comp by any means, but just kind of like the stats you were just mentioning as where he could be. Feels kind of like where a lot of people kind of project, you know, another Minnesota guy, Luke Kuechel, to be. Do you think there's some similarities there between Culpepper and Kuechel?
Yeah, probably. I think that's probably fairly similar. Maybe there's a little bit more power with Kuechel long term. And you know, he's not as good of a defender. But yeah, I think it's the same sort of bucket of players in terms of tools and attributes.
I said, yeah, I'm a pretty big Keisha guy. I like him a good bit. So maybe I just kind of like this, you know, profile a little bit more than most do. Yeah, just give me, I mean, yeah, I don't think he's going to be like a massive power guy by any means. Like you mentioned, the EVs are kind of middling. But yeah, just give me, if he gives me like, you know, 12, 15, somewhere like that, if he's getting at least in that double-digit range consistently with home runs, given the rest of what the profile could be, you know, with a good average or some, you know, decent amount of 20-plus steals, whatever it might be, I think that could be a pretty solid player, especially from second base, too, if he does move over there. But we'll see. A lot of moving parts are there in Minnesota. You know, they get a lot of pretty decent hitting prospects. So we'll see how that kind of all unfolds as they kind of go into a little mini rebuild here over the next few years. But you know, I think one of the more buzzy guys, especially from this past draft class, Dax Kilby. I mean, I think when kind of FYPD like rankings came out and it was really, you know, you had the top guys. You had the JoJo Parkers, Eli Willits, you know, the Ethan Holiday. But now I think the buzziest name probably is Dax Kilby. I mean, 18 games after the draft, 16% walk rate, only 13.5% K rate, hit 353, 457, 441. It was only 81 plate appearances, so not like you can take a lot from that. But, you know, also had 16 steals, kind of ran wild. So it was a really exciting 18 games for Dax Kilby. And I think you've seen just over the last like 4, 5, 6 months or so, that hype train to start, you know, really getting more and more and more momentum to the point where, you know, I'm seeing people put him top five FYPD right now. So, and obviously you guys have him ranked pretty highly here at the shortstop position. So, you know, what do you think here on Dax Kilby, Jeff? Is the hype and the buzz right now, is it warranted?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, you're also talking to somebody that I put out an FYPD list a couple of days after the draft, and we hit Kilby 13 before he even signed a professional contract. Like, so I think there is a narrative out there that this is just like, oh, he hit and he's a Yankees prospect and everyone's going crazy. This dude blew up the combine. Like And I have some access to like athletic testing and stuff like that much earlier in the process. And I'm aware of who the best athletes are in the class. And this guy was one of the top four athletes in the class, you know, blew up the combine testing, you know, put up a bunch of really loud EVs there. And then goes to the Florida State League, which is just a very tough place to hit, particularly, you know, in the Gulf Coast side, and just went crazy. I mean, The ground ball rate is a little high. He didn't hit any homers over that short sort of small sample size. but he was also playing high school baseball a couple months before that.
Right.
It's one thing to keep in mind and put up phenomenal numbers. He's going to run. All the EV data, which is public at that point in the Florida State League, was excellent. And, you know, I think when you take a look at a FYPD class on the high school side where you have some guys that have major hit tool questions and athleticism questions, like an Ethan Holiday, who's not a very good athlete, probably has zero chance of sticking at shortstop. He's had hit tool questions dating back to his junior year in high school. We've known about this. We talked about this. I know there were a couple of like videos and like tweets and stuff like, no, this guy's going to have a great hit tool. And no, his dad is Matt Holiday. So he's and his brother's Jackson. So he's going to like, I don't know if that's the case, man. Like he's always had that. He's always been Matt Holiday's kid. That from the moment he came under the earth, as far as I know, conception, he was Matt Holiday's kid. All right. Yep. And this problem has existed and it existed going into the draft. And you think about the team that drafted Ethan Holiday and what their track record is with high school players, what their track record is with $1 million plus bonus international guys over the last 5 to 10 years. It's awful. So I just don't think he's in a great spot. And I think you need to take all that in consideration when you're ranking for fantasy, because your team and your situation and your development opportunities that are in front of you based on your organization dictate a lot of how the next 3 to 5 years goes, frankly, unless you get traded, you know, and the Rockies never trade anybody, particularly prospects. So that's sort of what the issue is with me. And like, looking at Holiday versus some of these other guys, like I look at a Kilby, I look at a JoJo Parker, I look at Eli Willits, and it's like, well, Kilby's got the athleticism. We saw the underlying data that backed the hit tool. We know that Parker was one of the most polished, and he's just watched the swing. I mean, it's buttery smooth. Most polished combinations of hit tool and power in the class. So even if he's not a shortstop, which he probably isn't, it's maybe third base or second, fine. And then Eli Willits, you know, 17, so he really should be a high school senior this year because he reclassed. So he's super young. And it's 70 bat to ball skills with some speed, switch hitter. There's maybe some projection to add power. I'm not someone that thinks he's going to turn into a 20 home run bat, Willits, but you know, it might be enough that it's productive and he's sort of this leadoff hitter that steals bases and hits for a super high average and does all those things. But there's also some upside, like that the kid was 17 when he debuted in pro ball, you know, and that's just kind of a ridiculous thing. So I think you look at that, you look at Steele Hall, who is the best athlete among any of these players in the class and, you know, gets Trey Turner comps in terms of what his upside is, from a lot of evaluators and decision makers. And then, you know, someone like Gavin Fien, who's one of the more polished hit tools and power. I mean, like all the analysts, the database guys in front offices, he was like the guy that everyone stand. The Red Sox loved him. The Rangers loved him. So many teams really like Fien. So, you know, I think you look at this class, you look at all these high school shortstops that are available, and it's like, I don't know. Like at this point, I'll let someone else draft Ethan Holiday, you know, and I have him just outside of my top 25 for shortstop. So yeah, I think it's, you know, there's a lot of power there. There's on base ability. You know, certainly that could play in Coors long term, but I think you do have to question a little bit the quality of the hit tool. And, you know, there's guys that could swing and miss with power. Have your hit tool dictates how much of your power you get to and how impactful you are ultimately. So that's what my big concern is and my red flags are with Ethan Holiday.
Yeah, I found that every time I kind of look at whether it's my FYPD rankings or just my overall prospect rankings, I feel like I keep sliding Holiday further and further down. That's not to say I'm like out on Holiday, but yeah, that hit tool concern is valid, and it didn't really help that he didn't look that great. I'm not trying to bury him for a super small sample size after the draft or anything, but it didn't help that he looked kind of bad.
Those post-draft debuts, man, are sticky. Like, yeah, there's not a lot of guys that have, you know, if it's like five games, like throw it out the window, it's 10 games, whatever. There's not a lot of guys that get, you know, a decent month at a level that, you know, don't fully shake that. Like, how many guys run strikeout rates in their debut? And so it was 18 games, so 84 plate appearances that are like 40%. That's a 40% strikeout rate. And I can tell you, because I have the data in front of me, when you look under the hood, it's even worse. You know, he ran a 39.2%. This is every at bat that he took as a professional, 39.2% in zone whiff rate. How does that tell me, Eric? How does that get to a 60? How does that get to a 55? Because for me to call it a 55, he'd have to have like a 17% in zone whiff rate. He had a 42.8% whiff rate overall, you know, and he wasn't chasing like crazy, and he had a lower swing rate, you know. The power is good though, 105.5, 90th percentile. So if you do have Ethan Holiday on your team, I have him on one open universe league where I picked him up off the waiver wire like 2 years ago. If you have Ethan Holiday, you can at least take solace in the power. Maybe it's a Charlie Condon thing. Maybe it's just a bad debut and he figures everything out and has a pretty decent season. I'm still not in like the camp of I believe in Charlie Condon, frankly, but I kind of don't believe in any of the Rockies at this point. That's a generationally bad organization. Like, I actually think those teams the last couple of years and maybe this year are worse than that White Sox team that set the friggin' record, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I learned my lesson with the Rockies guys. Like, you know, with, you know, I was a big Garrett Hampson guy. Obviously, that did not work out whatsoever. You know, I was a big Veen guy. He still maybe has a chance of being something, but, you know, he's kind of been more down than up, and just so many more examples. And like when I forget what draft class it was. I want to say like 2021 when maybe 2022 when they got Benny Montgomery. It's like, oh, look at this Benny, you know, Benny Montgomery going to Coors. It's just, I got sucked in too many times with the Rockies, and for it just not to work out 99 times out of 100. I'm like, all right, I got to learn my lesson. And, you know, same thing keeps happening over and over again. I got to listen to it, and it's right there in front of my face. So, yeah, I'm not saying I avoid all Rockies prospects. Well, I do, you know, pitching prospects for the most part, but yeah, I definitely don't go as gaga when a fun guy goes to Colorado. I mean, yeah, you'd want him to go to Colorado as opposed to, you know, like a, you know, bad future ballpark. But yeah, it almost offsets, like, their bad development history almost offsets any like excitement you could get about having Coors Field as their future home ballpark. So yeah, Ethan Holliday's a guy keeps sliding down, and even just talking right now with you about Dax, I want to move Dax Kilby even higher. Yeah, he's really exciting for sure. I hate that he's a Yankee though. Yeah, I like him more than George Lombard too. Like, I think Dax is a better, like, more fantasy friendly.
Yeah, I think for fantasy for sure. Like Lombard, I think, you know, it stinks because like if he had stayed a little longer in high A, I think that like the numbers would have looked much better. He really got his teeth kicked in those first couple of months at Double A. Yeah. He's a great defender, though, like really heady shortstop. He does all those things really well. I think that's, you know, part of the reason that he's ranked as highly as he is on like real life list. But for fantasy, yeah, I would go Kilby. It's a pretty bad Yankee system, frankly. It's not great.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of gone down the last couple of years. And yeah, I saw Lombard, I think, for two different series this past year, kind of like what you mentioned, he's getting his teeth kicked in. I saw him a little bit during that time frame, and yeah, I agree. He looked really good at shortstop. I was like, oh yeah, this guy's going to stick there, no doubt about it. But I was just really underwhelmed at the plate. But I was trying to keep in mind, you know, he was very young. I think he was still was 20 this past season, if I recall correctly. So, you know, it's still very young for a Double A guy, as you know, the Eastern League, you know, not the most like hitter friendly environment in general. So you know, it's not like this like fun league where, you know, offense is abundant everywhere. But yeah, definitely Kilby more fantasy friendly profile here too. So one more guy in this range before we go into the last set of 10, Josuar Gonzalez, who thankfully kind of, you know, for the most part dropped the Jesus part from his listing name, so my name column on my spreadsheet isn't quite as wide anymore. But, you know, one of the top international guys from last year's signing period, came out of the Dominican Republic and had a pretty good first season down there in the DSL. 228 plate appearances, more walks than strikeouts. That's pretty fun. 288, 404, 455 slash line. Only four home runs, but ran wild, 33 steals. But hey, it's DSL. I think I could run wild in the DSL. So could you, Jeff. But Gonzalez, obviously, as being one of the bigger international guys last year, had a lot of hype just because of that. And now I think that hype has continued to grow a little bit here. So do you think Gonzalez, is a guy that, if we're talking again this time next year, is a guy that has jumped into like that elite range of shortstop prospects? Like, do you think that potential is there for him in 2026?
Yeah, 100%. He gets a lot of Francisco Lindor comps. I think the power will come. The underlying stuff is there. It's also, I think you got to keep in mind with a guy like Joe Suar is he's super young. So, he only signed a year ago. So, was 17 years old. It's also a switch hitter. So, he's got multiple swings to maintenance and, sort of stay on top of and improve. The EVs are there. When you think a 17-year-old, like a 103.6 90th, he had a 110.2 max, 89.7 average EV, 11% zone whiff, rarely chases. The angles aren't real great at this point, but it's also tough to know those because I don't have them broken down by righty and lefty swings. Mm-hmm. My understanding is the left-handed swing has a little bit, is his natural side and, has a little bit more lift to it in terms of the bat path and just able to backspin the ball a little bit better. I think that he's a guy that you could probably, if you're real high, on him, rank him as high as 25, somewhere in that range. Maybe for a lot of people, more in like the 30 to 50 tier. I do think he's a top 50 prospect, universally fantasy, real life. You're only ranking shortstops with, named with the letter J in their names, whatever it is. He's top 50 for all of us. But, good defender. He's going to stick at the position, really versatile. He's going to run. I think there's like five category upside here. And, I don't, it sucks that like Wander Franco is a creep and a criminal because he's such a good comp for guys like this and you can't use it. So that would be my comp, but it's strictly from a baseball perspective. As far as I know, just as far as Gonzalez is not a criminal. I don't want to, it's not the comp that I'm making here. I'm making the comp just strictly from a baseball perspective. Of a switch hitter, lots of contact, good EVs, angles got to get a little better, no doubt shortstop. It's one of those guys. So this is one of the international players that I think you should buy on now because a year from now, as you said, this could be a guy we're talking about top 10, top 5. If he has a phenomenal season, as we saw with Jesus Mate, he could be in the top 3 to 4 or 5 conversation. I mean, maybe number one, Connor Griffin and Kevin McGonigal are going to graduate. Someone's going to jump into that spot, Eric.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a good chunk of the top 10 is going to graduate. Weatherholt's going to graduate, maybe Walcott's up enough to graduate, guys like Bisayo, you're going to graduate. So there's going to be a lot of those guys near the top that are going to graduate. Some of the pitchers as well, obviously McLean is about to, and you Savage and all of them. So yeah, like that top like 10 to 15 range maybe has half of it or even up to 2/3 of it graduate in 2026. So yeah, definitely some spots there for guys like Gonzalez to maybe jump into, especially with the nice power speed blend that he has. And obviously don't take these DSL numbers with at face value. I mean, yeah, he had 4 home runs, 52 games, but there's definitely a lot more power there to be had, as you mentioned. So, and obviously pretty good approach for his age, pretty polished for an 18-year-old, a young 18-year-old too. He just turned 18 back in mid-October. So we'll play the entire 2026 season as a 18-year-old and coming stateside. Yeah, I think he keeps doing what he did last year and starts putting the ball over the outfield fence a little bit more. I think that hype is going to be super, super high on a Joe Suar Gonzalez. So very exciting here. Let's go on to the last set of 10 here, kind of like the 21 through 30 range of rankings. Jeff, what do you got in these spots?
Yeah, let me take a look here. So I had mentioned Pratt, Arquette, 2021, Emil Morales at 23, Jet Williams at 24, Carson Williams at 25, Ethan Holiday at 26, George Lombard Jr. at 27, Arjun Namala at 28, Tyson Lewis at 29, and Juan Sanchez at 30. Franklin Arias at 31. I am a Franklin Arias hater. I'm sure he's a fine gentleman. but I just don't buy into that profile. Like,
yeah,
he's like a 40 runner. There's not a lot of pop. It's a ton of ground balls. It's like batting average that you're buying into. So I don't know. I mean, can he become Jacob Wilson? Like, possibly. Do you even believe that Jacob Wilson can replicate what he did last year? Possibly. It's just not going to be on any of my teams, Eric.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just not a profile that I'm really going, like, seeking out in Dynasty League. And I'm not opposed to getting a guy like that if the value's right and if they're, like, second, third player involved in the deal, whatever. Like, I'm never going to be like, oh, no, I'm never going to have Arias ever. But, yeah, it's just not a profile I really like that much. So I'm glad that you said that you're not a big Arias guy because I'm really not either. I still have him, like, back end top 100. I don't even know if I like that, to be honest with you. I was kind of hoping, I mean, it still could happen that, you know, if the Red Sox were to go out and make another, you know, sizable trade for, you know, a frontline guy like a Freddy Peralta or whatever, that maybe they use an Arias. I just don't know where he fits in this infield picture for Boston long term. So, yeah, I'm not the biggest Franklin Arias guy either. Definitely hit tool, leading tool, or profile, I should say, with, I mean, what do you think power wise, like 12 to 15, maybe in that range?
I think it's more like, at this point, I think it's more like 5 to 9.
Okay, so you're not even thinking double digits here.
No, I mean, unless the angles change. The EVs are fine, but they're not great. Like, he's really going to have to figure out, as we talked about with Kevin McGonigal before, he's a guy that has to figure out how to backspin the ball to his pull side. And if you can't do that, there's probably not 15 to 20 home run projection. And I would think it's just more, he just catches one clean, you know, and it maybe happens 15 times a year and 8 of them go over the fence. I mean, cause how many homers did Arias have last year?
Once it was like 7 or maybe look, not even that.
Look right now. It might even surprise me. I think it might have been more than I remembered, but no, it's 8. He had 8 last year in 116 games. And, you know, he was playing a majority of those games in Greenville, which is a great place to hit home runs. And, you know, that, frankly, that South Atlantic League, like, you get to hit in Asheville, which I think down the line is like 289 to right field. You know, there's stuff like that. Like, so, you know, I'd have to look at where the home runs were specifically, but this isn't a guy that's going to hit a ball like 425 feet very often. I unless he just absolutely, like I said, catches it perfectly clean.
Yeah. And this is a guy that just, he's a little bit aggressive, you know, doesn't walk a whole lot. Swing rate was, you know, kind of closer to the 50% range, but puts the bat on the ball, you know, high 80s contact rates. So, you know, a lot of good there in terms of just putting the bat on the ball, which is, you know, obviously a very important tool to have. And we've seen, obviously you've seen plenty as well, these guys that just can't make contact but have like a really sexy profile elsewhere, just not, you know, fizzle out and not ever make it as a major leaguer. So at least he's got the hit tool going for him and making good contact. But yeah, for fantasy, I mean, maybe he's a little more valuable in like a points format, I guess. But yeah, there's not one where I'm looking at him and I'm like, yeah, I'm excited about him. I'm just not. So we'll see. He's still young. He just turned 20. He'll play the entire year, probably double A, a little bit triple A at 20 years old. So you got to factor that in a little bit. But yeah, just not a super high upside guy here for fantasy purposes. All right, my 21 through 30 here, I got Dax Kilby, who I'm already probably going to pump up here. And then I go Iva Arquette, Johnny Level. Tyson Lewis, then Johnny Level, Arjun Namala, George Lombard, Lyon Pena, Gavin Fien, Kason Cunningham, and Steele Hall are my 21 through 30. And then Arias is actually my number 30 guy. That was 29, Steele Hall. So 30 is Franklin Arias, who, again, is right around the back end of the top 100. So, you know, a few more FYPD guys that we already kind of talked about some of these guys, but another one that's kind of a fun little fantasy friendly type of profile potentially here. I didn't really throw him on the outline here, but I just want to see, since we talked a lot of FYPD guys, Kasun Cunningham, you know, Jeff, you know, Arizona's got a pretty solid track record getting these kind of fun, toolsy, you know, prep guys over the last handful of years. And, you know, they've been doing pretty well, I think, in developing these guys, you know, obviously like the Slade Caldwell types, you know, most recently. But, you know, what do you think about Kasun Cunningham long term? You think he's going to be a fun fantasy player here, too?
Yeah, I think it's probably speed and batting average, probably a second baseman. I don't know about the power projection there. He's another guy where that's what's kind of questionable, but I mean, it could be like a Franklin Arias with speed type of situation. I'm not crazy about him. I'm higher on some of the other guys in the class. Probably won't be in a lot of my teams. I could see there being fantasy upside where he kind of contributes in a lot of different ways and is just a really good baseball player. Could have some positional versatility. But I have to see it. I just don't know how much impact there is. And, you know, I like power, man. I'm a whore for power.
Yeah, no, I think you're not the only one that is a whore for power. That's a good way to put it. I love that you put it that way. But yeah, especially at this shortstop spot where, and I remember like growing up where I was like, you know, you had some of the power guys, you know, like that kind of stood out, like obviously like the A-Rods and the Nomars and the Mickey Tejadas and all those guys. But you know, I think it wasn't looked at as a, you know, power, like a big power spot, but now it is. I mean, all these, you know, premium athletes that are really getting into that power, and you see a lot of these 20, 25, 30 plus home run shortstops nowadays. So I guess it's really exciting. So now it's like you factor that into the prospect side where, all right, you know, what type of power does this guy got to get to? And a lot of times that could be kind of the X factor in between just being a decent fantasy player and, you know, more of a high impact one. So, yeah, Kasun Cunningham, really fun player. But again, he kind of fits into that mold of, you know, where does that power wind up long term? Is he just like a decent little, you know, fantasy option, or is he more of a maybe a top 100 fantasy guy, which I think is the upside if the power comes along a little bit? But well, we shall see. He's still pretty young as well. But kind of a fun part of my rankings there, you know, with Fien, with, you know, Cunningham, Steele Hall, all in that range, kind of all in like that back end top 100 range for me. Another guy that I didn't have on the outline here, but I want to get your thoughts on here. Kind of had a, you know, a rough last couple of years, especially here in 2025. That's Arjun Namala with the Toronto Blue Jays. A guy that had a decent amount of hype coming in, you know, to 2025, even 2024, but hasn't really put it all together. You know, kind of lower batting averages the last couple of years. So I feel like the prospect shine on an Arjun Namala has dulled a little bit, you know, over the last couple of years, Jeff. Are you looking like buy low on him at all in the Dynasty League?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you look at his two seasons and you got to look at, you know, the fact that he probably shouldn't have been assigned to Dunedin. He's super young. I mean, he was 17 at the time of the draft, didn't turn 18, I think, until December after his draft year. So, I mean, he is super, super young and probably wasn't ready for full season ball. They made some adjustments to his swing. And if you remember the second half, he was literally one of the best hitters in like a ball in the second half. I believe that he had the most extra base hits of any player 18 years or younger in pro ball in 2024. And then the beginning of this year, the first 2 months of the season, people were shoving him up to like 25 on fantasy lists. And it was because he was the youngest player in the Northwest League and was one of the best hitters. Over the first 2 months, he was phenomenal. And then things started to fall apart. I think it was a timing issue. If you look, his strikeout rate did not jump. His strikeout rate went down this year. And his contact numbers went up this year. And the EVs went up. I think he just tries to catch everything out front. And it was just a lot of like pop-ups and fly balls. And if you watch, like, I've dug in on Arjun Namala a lot because I cover the Blue Jays and, you know, he's a top four prospect for the Jays. And, you know, I think like there's some timing stuff with him that's kind of funny. And there's some postural stuff that they've changed with him a few times. It got him a little bit more upright. They moved him a little bit more into the plate. One of the things that he was having trouble with in his first go in 2024 in Dunedin before they shut him down and then sort of reworked the swing and then sent them back out was like he was not like behind on the ball, but it was almost like where he was catching it, like timing wise, wasn't good. So it's not a contact thing with him. The bat to ball skills are fine. It was just more of like the angles, but in like a weird way that wouldn't show up in like launch angles. You know what I mean? It was more like, it would show up in like contact point metrics and like that sort of thing, just in terms of like swing depth, you know, like you talk about like Kyle Tucker takes things really back here. He's catching everything way too far out front that I think like when he's covering the outer half of the plate and his posture is right, like he's catching stuff middle and driving it to his pull side. So I still think it's really interesting. He's still really, really young. He's 20 years old for all of next year. And it's a plus defender at shortstop with a plus arm. You're going to see him a lot next year in New Hampshire. And I'm interested to see if he takes some steps forward because he's had two great halves and then two bad halves, more or less.
Right.
And this second half this year, if you look, it's just like really low batting average on ball and play type of stuff. You know, it's not like his strikeout rate jumped to 31% and his whiff rate like bottomed out. It was like, no, he wasn't striking out. He just wasn't, he wasn't whatever. Balls weren't dropping for him.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was, super low BABIP, as you mentioned, 266 BABIP, which is about 35 points lower than it was the previous season. Yeah. And then that definitely factors in. But like you mentioned, dropping that K rate was really, encouraging because, 30.7% K rate in 2024 down to a 21.4% K rate. So that's a little over 9% drop, keeping that walk rate right around 10%. Definitely has some pretty good power projections. I think you could even add a little bit more bulk to that frame. So I was never the biggest Nymala guy, but even at this point where I think given how much the perceived value and, the associated price tag, I think dropped over the last 12 months or so, I think he is a decent buy at this point.
Yeah. I mean, the first 46 games of the season at the same level, he hit 291, 382, 527 with like eight or nine home runs, 17.5% strikeout rate, 11.8% walk rate. And, at that point, it was a 319, BABIP. You then go from like June 3rd until the end of the season. And, it's a sample of now 74 games, but BABIP's 231. He had a 23.9% strikeout rate over that period, 9.1% walk rate. So like the strikeout rate jumped a little bit, but it's 23.9% for a 19-year-old in high A is not high.
Yeah, that's right? Not bad at all. Yeah, exactly.
It's not high. It's just like the luck just bottomed out with him. And I think some of it, like I said, was timing and like the quality of the contact, but he was making the contact. It wasn't like he was behind on fastballs. It wasn't like he was getting chewed up on spin. It's just, some timing stuff that I think he needs to work through. And I think that was always part of the package with Nymala, that he was younger and a little bit more raw.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Since you do, have a lot of insight into Toronto, I wanted to pick your brain on one more player. Well, I already discussed in a previous episode, but I want to get your thoughts on him because I am pretty high on this guy, Juan Sanchez. Played some third, some short this past year in the DSL. One of the kind of bigger bodied, projectable shortstops where probably doesn't have a lot of speed, but that bat could be truly impressive. And obviously, still a long, long way to go in his development, but early returns are pretty impressive. So what do you think on Juan Sanchez?
Yeah, I mean, he probably moves over to third base. Big power bat. We have some video up on socials. I mean, it's a pretty impressive swing. Tons of power. I don't think it's Junior Cameron Air or anything like that, but I think could be, a top 100 prospect this time next year, and somebody that once he comes stateside could, if he really mashes in the complex and gets it in need, and could be a guy that makes a big jump this year. Not super twitchy. He's not going to hit, he's not going to run a ton, but could hit for average with some power, and there aren't a lot of guys like that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, last little question here for Jeff before we get out of here. I mean, obviously, not all these guys are playing short. I mean, there's only so many shortstop spots, you know, for these players to kind of fit into at the major league level. Though we do see a lot more, you know, dual and tri-eligibility guys than we used to. But, you know, and we've already talked about some of these guys that are probably going to move off, you know, like Weatherholt maybe to second or third, Aiden Miller to third, you know, a few others. Are there any other names, kind of out of all these names that we talked about in this episode, Jeff, that you feel, you know, pretty confident that, you know, there's a 50%+ chance that they're going to move off to another spot, maybe a Luis Peña or any other names here that you think they're going to move off this position in the coming years?
Yeah, I mean, I think Peña moves off the position. I think there's a good chance Rayner maybe moves off the position. We didn't talk through Colt Emerson, but if he moved over to third base, that wouldn't shock me. Same with Bonmer. Luis Peña, for sure. I don't think there's any chance he plays shortstop, frankly. Kilby could move to third base. That wouldn't shock me. Jojo Parker, for me, is definitely moving off. Culpepper is definitely moving off. Gavin Fien is going to end up moving off. Arquette could, but he is a pretty good defender at short. I think Ethan Holliday, no doubt, is going to move off the position. Jet Williams probably isn't a shortstop long term, probably more a second baseman and center fielder. I think of the names that we talked about, you know, Sanchez, you know, those guys are going to move off. Arias probably sticks around because he is a very good defender, actually.
Yeah, I wish we can get some more of these names. Like, we didn't even get to Cole Emerson or some other guys. Emil Morales, a few more names that we didn't even get to talk about, really, because so many good shortstops, and we could talk for hours upon hours on this position. But we will wrap it up there, but the hour 15 mark here. Jeff, I always appreciate chatting with you. I always feel like I learn something every time I talk with you, and you're one of the first people I kind of met in this industry, you know, back in the day, and especially in person from, you know, every time we cross paths somewhere at a ballpark in New England here. But always appreciate you, man. And, you know, before we get out of here, you know, what do you guys got going on over at Baseball America?
Yeah, so all of our fantasy rankings are up now. We actually have some redraft rankings dropping tomorrow or Tuesday, or maybe today when you're listening to this. So go and check those out. Those are done by Dylan White. He's retired from the NFBC main event circuit, and he won a few years ago. And these are his actual redraft rankings with like NFBC in mind. I'm just saying there's probably not a lot of NFBC main event winners that have published rankings out there for you to consume. Dylan did that. And of course, we got all the top 30s up. We're in the middle of updating our college top 25 and all of our draft rankings for 2026. So really any avenue of baseball that you're interested in, we have something for it. We even have baseball card stuff. So, I mean, we kind of cover the full gamut of, all things baseball. Baseball America touches it.
Yeah, and shortstop prospect rankings are going to get, obviously a lot of good new players in the upcoming draft, but one really big name that could go 1-1 overall, Rosh Chmielewski from UCLA. That could be a really fun addition to these top of these rankings next year, but that will wrap up this episode. Thanks again to Jeff Ponce of Baseball America for joining me to break down all these exciting names. I'll be back with you all in a few days for shortstop dynasty rankings. But until then, everyone take care.
Reggie, I just sold my car online.
Let's go, Grandpa. Wait, you did?
Yep, on Carvana. Just put in the license plate, answered a few questions, got an offer in minutes. Easier than setting up that new digital picture frame.
You don't say.
Yeah, they're even picking it up tomorrow. Talk about fast.
Wow, way to go. So, about that picture frame.
Forget about it. Until Carvana makes one, I'm not interested.
Car selling made easy. On Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.